So the text begins like this. It is from the fourth chapter, the third Brahman of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which is a part of the Shukla Yajurveda tradition. The fourth chapter, the third Brahmanam. Brahmanam sometimes in English translation, it may be given as section. So chapter is adhyaya in Sanskrit. So the fourth chapter and third section in third Brahman. Janakam ka vaidekam yajnavalkyo jagama samelena vadishyati athaha yet janakascha vaideho yajnavalkyascha agnihotre samudade tasmaiha yajnavalkyo varam dadu saha kama prasnameva vavre tam kasmai dadu tam ka samradeva purvam paprachya. So this great sage Yajnavalkya, the great philosopher of those times in India, he is paying a visit to his friend, an equally renowned philosopher of those times, namely King Janaka. Now Yajnavalkya had decided not to open the dialogue this time, because he was a famous speaker, famous exponent of Vedanta of that period. And Janaka was of course equally famous. But Yajnavalkya was a sage who had taken to monasticism. Janaka was a reigning emperor of those times. So this time Yajnavalkya had taken a decision in his mind. He would open the conversation this time. But then there was an agreement among them earlier. In an earlier Vedic sacrifice, Yajnavalkya had given one boon to his friend Janaka. You can ask me one question, whatever question you want, on some future occasion. But it was not specified. So whatever question you want to ask, in whatever direction you want to open the dialogue, you are free to do so. So Yajnavalkya had given this permission as a boon to his friend Janaka. So this time Janaka opens the dialogue, the conversation. Now there are a few interesting aspects about this dialogue. If you read the Upanishads, you find the absolute reality is expounded with the help of different parables, imagery, stories and illustrations. There are different approaches in the exposition of the absolute reality Brahman in the Upanishadic tradition. For example, to give just an example, if you go to Mandukya Upanishad, the approach is purely psychological. It is called in a Mandukya Prakriya, based on our experiences in the three states of our consciousness, namely waking state, dream state and deep sleep state. In Sanskrit it is called Jagravastha, Sopnavastha and Susuptiavastha. Whatever we experience, whatever we do, all belong to either one or all the three of these three states of human consciousness. Waking state, dream state, deep sleep state. In waking state, we interact with the world, we do our work at the concrete level, at the gross level, involving the mind and five senses of perception or the five senses of action. We see, we smell, we touch, we taste, and so on. And also we walk, different activities involving the mind and the five senses of perception or five senses of action. So it's called the gross states. In dream state, what happens? Whatever we have done during waking states is stored within the mind, and they come to the surface during dream state. So everything happens at the mental level. You may go to sleep in pitch darkness in a room, and you may dream yourself walking under the burning sun in a desert. Or you may find yourself riding an elephant in a dream, though you are actually sleeping in a tiny dark room, which cannot even contain a bicycle. Now, so you can see that many things happen in dream, but all dream experiences are somehow related to waking state experiences, but they are not duplications of waking state experiences, because in dream state, you may need only a split second from here to New York, to reach New York from here. But in waking state, you may need 4 hours, perhaps, maybe more. So there are differences with regard to grossness of subtlety, differences with regard to space, time and causation and so on. But still, they are mutually related. In deep sleep stage, we don't experience anything. Everything is subdued, everything is merged in the darkness of non-awareness, or what's called mula vidya, means the whole holistic dimension of ignorance. Anyway, just giving an example. Now, the Upanishads ask you the question, what is real here? There are differences, there are changes with regard to what you experience. But there is no difference with regard to the experiencer himself. The seer, the witness, the experiencer, the subject remains the same. The objects, the seen, the experienced, changes from waking state to dream state and from dream state to deep sleep state. So, what is subject to change is only relative. What is beyond changes, what doesn't change, but never undergoes any change, is the real. So the seer, the experiencer, the subject, the witness is real. The seeing, the experienced, the witnessed, the objects are only relative. Drishyam is the seeing, and drashta is the witness or experiencer. So very psychological approach you find here. Now, in many other Upanishads, there are different approaches. Sometimes, you know, the absolute reality is approached and expounded in what is called a cosmic pattern. It's called Viti Mukha Nishedha. Viti Nishedha Vakya means Nishedha Mukha Vakya. Nishedha Mukha Vakya means these objects that I see, the senses which help me to see objects, the mind which takes the senses to its different objects, the intellect that discerns, all these things are only relative. Remember, in Vedanta, there is no such thing as mithya being unreal. Sometimes, you know, mithya or maya is very wrongly interpreted as unreal. It is not absolute unreality. It is not absolute reality either. We see them, we experience them. Therefore, they are not absolutely unreal. But we do not see them or experience them all the time. They change, so they are not absolutely real. So they are not absolutely real, and also they are not absolutely unreal. They are called relative. So Vedanta says, the seeing, the objects are relative. The seer is the absolute reality. So also, all these things are only relative. Only Atman, the consciousness, the Brahman, the eternal subject, the eternal witness is the only absolute reality, because it doesn't change. This is another approach. Then there is another approach, Sarvam Khalu Idam Brahma. Whatever you see, everything in this world is nothing but Brahman. It is the cosmic approach, the positive approach. There is nothing in the world which is really different from consciousness, because the consciousness is present, immanent, everywhere. But not in the form of these names and forms. You remove name and form from all these relative worldly things, then what remains is the absolute reality. Because it doesn't change. Names and forms change. Just like, you know, suppose you have 1,000 utensils, pots, pans, glasses and jars made of clay. The clay is real because it is out of clay that you have made all these 1,000 pots. But one glass is different from a big jar or a big pot. You don't drink water with a pot. You need a glass. So with regard to the utility, you manufacture different things out of the same clay and you give different names because they have different shapes and forms, nama and rupa. And also their buddhi vyavahara. So if you remove all these differences, with regard to names and forms, what remains is clay. Similarly, if you remove all the names and forms in this empirical universe, then what remains is Brahman only. This is another approach. Now here the approach is totally different. So I am just slowly bringing you to a special approach in this particular dialogue. Here, the absolute reality is expounded as light. Now, you should not take light as the light of a matchstick or a lamp or the electric bulb. But there is a great significance in using the word light. Jyoti is the word. Now, what is the special characteristic of light? The light can reveal itself and the light can also reveal other things. If you bring light, suddenly you see the lights and you also see other objects which are revealed by the light. So light reveals itself and the light reveals everything else. Now what is the real life within us when a human being dies? Yes, dies. There are many people who die with their body system intact. They can see when they were alive. Suppose 5 minutes before they died, they could see, they could hear, they could perhaps, there are many people who could even think before 5 minutes, 10 minutes before they die. It's not that all the senses completely decay, not necessary. There are many people who could see, smell, hear and even talk and understand, recognize others even 5 or 10 minutes before they died. Now, what makes it impossible for them to see anything when they die? Something leaves that body. It's just not a mind. Now, what do you call the mind? If we interpret mind as a creation of matter, then you have to remember that mind should be a reflecting medium through which something reflects, which enables the mind to think. And also the intellect could grasp and understand, could recognize things. Because the intellect borrowed some faculty from a higher source. That should be this Atman, this light. So in this dialogue, the discussion is very interesting. By the way, I should read the text and as we proceed. Now, when Janaka reached the palace, he sat down. When Yajnavalkya paid a visit to Janaka, King Janaka, and Yajnavalkya seated in front of him, maybe in the court, you can just imagine the glory and the greatness of the civilization. When, say, about 8,000 years back, big emperors, kings and princes, and great philosophers and sages, including human sages, that is for you should remember that, came to big imperial courts and open discussion. If you If you read the history of the Assyrians, the Babylonians, and the Assyrians, and many other Egyptians, you won't hear anything like this. You find many elaborate rituals taking place, including human sacrifices, plenty of that, plenty of bloodshed in the Babylonian, Assyrian, or Egyptian civilization. But nobody discusses the question, what lies beyond, what's beyond death? What's the real meaning of life? What's the fundamental truth in this world? You won't come across such dialogue. You read the City of Death of the Egyptians, you won't come across anything. Here's something very interesting, and maybe in the next retreat you find a mighty woman philosopher just barges into an imperial court and challenges all the philosophers and kings. And she's not driven out of the court, mind you. She's honored and respected. This happens 7,000 years back. Gargi is the name of that human philosopher. So that's what really impressed men like Schopenhauer, Max Müller, who, after reading the Upanishads, they never read anything. You can read the works, the writings of Schopenhauer. Paul Deussen left Bombay. He spent several years in India after studying Sanskrit and Vedanta and the great Pandits in Benares. When he left Bombay, the Bombay city gave him a send-off. And Paul Deussen's translation of Upanishads into German is supposed to be the best and the most accurate, most perfect as far as translations could go into any European language. So when he was about to board the ship, he said, he spoke a few things about the Upanishads, the glory of the Upanishads. And then, the last, you Indians, keep it up. That is the last word. And he boarded the ship. Now what captured these master minds of a completely alien culture and civilization, which transformed their life? Look at Max Müller. Both the husband and wife started reading the Vedas. Max Müller was commissioned by some Christian missionary organizations to read this in English so that Hindus will understand what absolute rubbish Vedas contain. And once Max Müller started translating, he never did anything else and became a fan, a devotee of Vedas. Paul Deussen, Schopenhauer, Vindanis, many, the list is so long, Tauron Times, Balpola, many others, David Frobley, many others. So something very interesting here. About 8,000 years back, great philosophers, including women saints and philosophers, are invited to imperial courts and discuss the highest spiritual metaphysics in the presence of hundreds of scholars. In the Brihadaranyaka Vartika, you find Sureshwaracharya Vartika is a Sanskrit metrical commentary. Ete sarve brahmanaha panditaha gandhara desiyaha tragataha, meaning is all these great scholars, they are coming, some looking at one group of one contingent of scholars, they are coming from Gandhara, means today's Kabul, Gandhara, today's Afghanistan. So people were coming from all over. So I had to give an idea of the scene before we enter the dialogue. So here, when Yajnavalkya came to the court and sat, Janaka, maybe after some preliminary introduction of me, greetings, he asked the question, Kim Jyotirayam Purushaiti? Now, the meaning is this. When you live in this world, what enables you to move about, to do your duty, to travel about, and return to your place? Yajnavalkya, kim jyotirayam purushaiti? Aditya jyoti. If somebody asks you, what enabled you to drive along the road in this city, in the Dallas city, you say sunlight helped you. So simple. So apparently you find The dialogue doesn't contain much. But as you reach the last Atmajyoti Prakaranam, the context of discussing Atmajyoti, you will understand the depth of metaphysics here. Then, so Yajnavalkya says, Adityena eva ayam jyotishaste pallayate karma gurude vipallayate iti. Eva mayavedat Yajnavalkya. So, he Yajnavalkya, who enables you, what light enables you, or enables people to do their work, to sit, to go everywhere, and after doing their work, to return home? So, Yajnavalkya said, it is the light of sun. Here means, this light comes from outside the body. See, the light of sun apparently comes from outside. You have to understand this point. Whether light is within us or the light is without, the central theme of the dialogue is the real light is not coming from the sun or the moon. The real light is coming from within yourself. That light comes from your own consciousness, the Atman. When that Atman withdraws from the body, human body, that body is not able to do anything. It can't see, it can't hear, it can't touch. When that light is within the body moves, it thinks, it conducts retreats, it discusses metaphysics and spirituality. When that light is withdrawn, nothing remains. So, to begin with, Yajnavalkya introduces the grossest dimension of light. Light is knowledge, consciousness. Aditya Jyoti. Because this Jyoti comes from outside. So Yajnavalkya comes down to the level of the common people. And you say, well, apparently it is this light is coming from sunlight. There is nothing very high in this particular answer, not much higher metaphysical or spiritual depth in this. But as we proceed, you will understand. So, Yajnavalkya continues the question. Astamite aditye Yajnavalkya kim jyoti revayam purushaiti. Chandrama eva asya jyoti bhavatiti. Chandramasa eva ayam jyotihi. Chandramasa eva ayam jyotisha aste palliyade karma gurude vibhallayeti eva mayavedat Yajnavalkya. So the second question is, suppose there is no sunlight, the sun has set in the west, what light enables you to see, to do your work and return home? So Yajnavalkya replies, Chandramasa jyotisha eva ayam palliyade karma gurude vibhallayeti. Me Chandramasa jyotisha, the light of moon. So this light also comes from outside. The point is, from an external gross point of view, it is a light that comes from outside that enables you to do your work in this world, to exist. Finally, you will understand the real light is within. In the absence of this inner light of Atman, all the external lights become futile. They become powerless. No sun can reveal anything if the light of Atman is absent in us. So that's the conclusion. Slowly you will come to that. So the second question is, Astamite aditye Yajnavalkya kim jyotirevayam purushaiti chandrama eva asya jyoti bhavati iti. Chandramasa eva ayam jyotisha aste palliyade karma gurude vibhallayeti iti. Eva mayavedat Yajnavalkya. Now third question. Suppose there is no sunlight, there is no moonlight. Now what do you do? Astamite aditye Yajnavalkya chandramasi astamide kim jyotirevayam purushaiti అగ్ని ఏవ అస్య జ్యోతిర్భవతీతి, అగ్నినా ఏవ అయం జ్యోతిషాస్తే పల్లయతే కర్మ కురుతే విపల్యతేతి. So, suppose there is no sunlight, sun has set in the west, and the moon also is not there. There is no moonlight, no stars, dark light, dark night, pitch dark. Then what do you do? You know, you strike a candle, you strike a matchstick, matchbox, and you have a light. Maybe modern times, electricity, whatever it is. Anyway, that is some form of Agni, fire. Maybe in ancient times. So, if there is no sunlight, no moonlight, then you depend upon some fire. You start a fire, a small fire, some fireplace. You may strike a matchbox or a candle. That's understood. Here also, the light comes from outside, not within. Because when the matchstick is outside of us, outside of the body-mind complex. Sunlight, sun, outside. Moon also outside. So, at all these levels, Yajnavalkya doesn't introduce the highest metaphysics. Then next question. Astamide Aditya Yajnavalkya Chandramasi Astamide Shanti Agno Kim Jyotirevayam Purushaiti వాక్ ఏవాస్య జ్యోతిర్భవతీతి వాచ ఏవ అయం జ్యోతిష ఆస్తే పల్లయతే కర్మ కురుతే విపల్యతేతి తస్మాత్ వై సామ్రాటది యత్రస్సు పాణిర్న వినిజ్ఞాయతే అథ యత్ర వాక్ ఉచ్చరతి ఉపైవ తత్ర నైతీతి ఏవమేవైదత్ యాజ్ఞవల్క్య. వాట్ ఇస్ ద ఫోర్త్ వన్? సపోజ్ దేర్ ఇస్ నో సన్ లైట్, నో మూన్ లైట్, నో ఫైర్, బట్ యు ఆర్ సిట్టింగ్ ఇన్ ఎ డార్క్ రూమ్. You can't hear, you cannot see, because there is no sunlight, no moonlight, no candle, no fire also, no fireplace. But suppose there is a vehicle, a car moving in the street. You will know, the light of knowledge of the car moving the street will come to your mind. How does it happen? You hear the noise from the street, and this noise becomes light. Light here means revealer. See, during daytime, sun is a revealer, sunlight. Through sunlight, by sunlight, you see things. When there is no sunlight, if there is perfect moon, Purnima, then moonlight becomes the revealer, which means the moonlight makes it possible, enables you to understand the existence of things. The sat, the existence of the reality of things is revealed to you by moonlight when there is no sunlight. When there is neither sunlight, no moonlight, no fire, then what happens? Your ears and the sound, the noise, the speech, walk means speech, coming from, it means some dimension of the sound mechanism. That's what walk here means. So, through noise, you come to understand that there is a car or truck moving the street. So, walk becomes, means speech becomes, the sound phenomenon becomes the revealer, the source of knowledge, which enables you to understand the reality of a vehicle moving in the street. So the role of sunlight is taken up by the speech when there is no sunlight, no moonlight, no fire. That's why, you know, sometimes when you can't see your own hands, you can't see your own, you can't see anything in your room, what happens? Through some sound, voice or noise, you come to know of the existence of things around you. So, we have covered Aditya Jyoti, Chandra Jyoti, Agni Jyoti, Vag Jyoti. So, four dimensions of light, four dimensions of consciousness, four dimensions of the absolute reality. They are all gross dimensions. Aditya Jyoti, Chandra Jyoti, Agni Jyoti, Vag Jyoti. Now, the final question comes. Astamide Aditya Yajnavalkya, Chandramasi Astamide, Shante Agno, Shantayam Vaji, Kim Jyotirevayam Purusha Iti, Atma Eva Asya Jyotir Bhavati Iti, Atmana Eva Ayam Jyotisha Aste Palliyade Karma Kurude Vipalliyade Iti. This is the beginning of metaphysical discussion here. Suppose there is no external light and you can't hear. Suppose you are deaf. You are completely deaf. You can't see because there is no light. Still, you will be sitting, you will be meditating. You can find things happening in your own mind. You will think, you will imagine yourself walking in the street, because before, earlier, when you could see things, your mind and the sense of vision, sense of sight, together focused on some visual objects. So that memory, that impression, that image is registered in the mind. When you sit quiet, these memories can come to the surface. That's what happens in memory and also in dream. In Vedantic tradition, there is no qualitative difference between smriti and supna. Smriti is memory, supna is dream. When we can relive what you have experienced earlier, it is smriti, memory or dream. Actually, we always relive, re-experience whatever we have experienced in the past. You can, for example, a great painter, he goes to a museum or an art gallery, sees the work of a great master. And perhaps keeping that in mind, if he's a great painter, he can draw a painting. A great painter can draw your picture, even if he had seen you only once. When you learn music, you listen to your teacher, and you register the tune, the symphony, the rhythm, everything in your mind. And next day, you practice it. You are not hearing it, but within your mind, you are practicing it. It means silently, you are reliving, re-experiencing whatever you have experienced in the past. You see again in your mind. You hear again in your mind. You touch also. You smell also. You can smell the perfume of incense sticks that you have smelled yesterday, mentally. At the mental level, not at the level of the senses, not the sensory level. To experience things at the sensory level, you should see things in front of you. That's what happens in human life, you know. We inherit many experiences from the past. What we remember, what we have experienced in this life, we remember with name and form. What we have experienced in the past life, we remember in abstract form as ideas and concepts. That's why when you read a book, when you listen to a great lecture, when you listen to music, suddenly you are able to appreciate it because you have experienced it in the past. It's only a revision. But you don't see the person. You have learnt the music in the past, sometime in past life. So you are able to learn it quickly this time. We call it prodigy. Actually, there's nothing unscientific, or nothing miraculous about it. It's pure psychology and science. You already studied the music in the past. Maybe not in this life, in previous life. So when you hear that again, it is only revision. Your memory connects with that. That way, you know, in the Gita, ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണൻ ടെൽസ് തത്രതം ബുദ്ധി സംയോഗം ലഭതേ പൗർവദേഹികം യതദേച തതോ ഭൂയ സംസിദ്ധു കുരുനന്ദന. This buddhi, this antakarana, it retains all the memories and impressions, and again, maybe after several centuries, several lives, it can again relive, re-experience. Similarly, when you sit in a room, you are deaf, you can't hear anything, you can't see anything because there is no sunlight, no moonlight, no fire. You, in your own mind, you really, you see, you observe, you think, you can hear. And this happens because there is that final source of knowledge, the inner light within, the consciousness, the Atman, which is still there. When that disappears from the body, the sunlight cannot reveal anything. Because the sun, the moon, the fire, all these borrow their ability to reveal things from this Jyotisham Jyoti, light of lights. It's called means Atman Jyoti. So, in reply to this, in which case, Atmana eva ayam Jyotisha asti. Atmana Jyotisha. Through the light of Atman, through the light of the Self, we are able to understand, we are able to work, we are able to move about, and so. Now, this Atman is the source of all lights. And this Atman is within us. It never leaves us. It only changes its vehicle, its medium. This Atman, it was never born because there was no time when it did not exist. And birth is only a transition from a state of non-existence into existence. Atman is ajam, which means it is birthless because it always exists. And therefore it is deathless. It never ceases to be. And therefore it is free from the six changes according to Vedantic tradition. Everything in this world, empirical world, this relative world, is subject to changes, six changes. Kujayade, asti, vardhade, viparinamade, kshiyade, nasyati, abhinasyati. Six changes. Birth, existence, growth, evolution, decay and death. These are the six changes. Anything which is born has to go through these stages before its death. Birth is one, then it exists, the same condition. Then it grows, then it evolves. And then anything which grows has to decay and it disappears. Everything in this world. And this is as true as the cosmos. It may exist for maybe millions of years. As it is true of an insect, which may exist only for a few minutes or seconds. So whatever belongs to time, space and causation is relative. The absolute is beyond time, space and causation. So, Janaka understood that this Atma Jyoti is the light of all lights. It is Jyotisham Jyoti. Because Atma Jyoti alone can reveal everything in this world. Even if there are 1,000 lights, 1,000 sunlights, 1,000 suns or moons, they cannot reveal anything when this Atma Jyoti leaves the human body mechanism. And this is not only external light. This light is within us. When we meditate or when we study scriptures, we are able to understand the intricacies of higher metaphysical, spiritual, philosophical systems to the extent of the evolution of this Atma Jyoti within. That's why Swami Vivekananda said one context, the difference between an amoeba and a Buddha is one of degrees, not of kind. In an amoeba, this Atma Jyoti, this light of Atman, light of self, is at a very low degree. It is not very effulgent. It is not highly evolved. It is in a very primitive state of evolution, in an amoeba. Buddha in Sanskrit means the enlightened person. In a great spiritual personality, this Atma Jyoti is manifesting in its full effulgence. It is effulgent. It is all illuminating. So, Yajnavalkya says, all other entities borrow the ability to reveal things, to understand things from this Atma Jyoti. This is the essence of this dialogue. Of course, the dialogue continues, but we don't have time to go through them. No, we will have interaction maybe for 10-15 minutes. We can ask any question directly related to this or other topics.
What is the next question?
Oh, after this? Oh, I can take it up. Yes. Okay, now the question is this. Yeah, Janaka's next. Katama Atma Iti. What is this Atman? Katama Atma Iti. Now, Janaka continues. Yoyam Vijnana Maha Praneshu Hrithi Antar Jyoti Purusha Sa Samana Sa Nubhau Loku Anusincharati Dhyayativa Lelayativa Sahi Sopno Bhutva Imam Lokam Atikramati Mruto Rupani, etc. Now, this Atman, it functions as Swayam Jyoti, as the inherent self-effulgent self, Atman, in our intellect, and also in the senses, in the mind. So, this Atman, when it manifests, when it becomes effulgent in mind, then mind becomes endowed with the faculty of higher thinking. When this Atman manifests in intellect, the intellect becomes endowed with the faculty of higher thinking, higher reading. So what happens? In reality, this Atman itself is not thinking. It is not moving. But the presence of the Atman, this Atman Jyoti, enables us to think. Mind thinks, speculates. Intellect decides. Chittam retains memory. And aham, it identifies. So, the antakarana, you know. Mana, buddhi, chitta, ahankara. Mana is sankalpa, vigatpa, atmega, antakarana, buddhi, mana. Mind is nothing but that dimension of antakarana, which functions as speculation. When you see an object from a distance, you are not sure what it is. If semi-darkness, you see an object, something which resembles a human form. That human form, you know, it may be a thief, or it may be a pillar, or a wall. When you reach it, you understand it's a pillar, not a human being. So your mind has speculated, but finally when you reach the spot, your intellect has decided. This is a wall or a statue. So nishya niga antakarana vritti buddhi. Buddhi or intellect can decide. This is not a human being. This is only a pillar. Then you suddenly remember this pillar. I have seen this last week. So the memory of seeing this pillar last week is registered in the chitta. It's another compartment of the internal organs. And then you suddenly, I have seen this. You identify yourself as a seer who has experienced the same act of seeing the statue, maybe 1 week back. That's why when we read scriptures, we are miraculously, mysteriously drawn to a certain spiritual ideas. Because these ideas, these concepts are registered in the chitta. Maybe not in this life, maybe a 1,000 years back. But when our intellect reconnects with those ideas, after 1,000 years, after several lives, 20 lives, suddenly it reconnects. The connection is re-established. And suddenly you feel all interested in this. If you walk in the street of the city, you see different billboards. There are places, meditation centers. There are also not so desirable places also. So depending upon our culture, our inherited tendencies and impressions, we are drawn towards certain places, certain ideas, certain concepts, and we are caught and we are trapped and we continue our spiritual journey. In the 6th chapter, the end of the 6th chapter Gita, Lord Krishna says, when you suddenly remember these accumulated tendencies and impressions, you automatically continue your spiritual journey, your effort to make further progress in spiritual life. So, in response to this question, that is when Janaka asks, Katama Atma Iti Yoyam Vijnanamayaka Praneshu Kriti Antarjyoti Purusha Sa Samana Sanubhuloku Anusancharati. So Yajnavalkya says, this Atman, it manifests within the inner chamber of the intellect, in senses, in mind, in all these aspects as the inner jyoti. Means it is called Swayam Jyoti. So, depending upon the effulgence of the manifestation of this jyoti, we are able to make progress in spiritual life. That's why Swami Vivekananda said, you know, Namiba, the Swayam Jyoti Atman is manifesting in a very low level of effulgence. In a great spiritual personality, it manifests in full effulgence. That's idea behind. Through unselfishness, through the practice of spiritual disciplines, meditation, karma yoga, all the 4 yogas are prescribed for this, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, karma yoga and rajyoga. We can manifest this Swayam Jyoti within more and more. That's the central message. Okay, I think we'll continue maybe after half an hour.